Blog Talk Radio.
Another edition of Sports Tonight. I'm very honored to have Kate Smith, and I was standing up for that whole Kate Smith extravaganza brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. We purchased a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. I'd like to welcome Orlando legend Roger Hendler, a special guest, 25 years in the National Football League, Mr. Morton Anderson. Morton, our pleasure. Welcome to the program. Very honored to have you on tonight, sir.
Good to be with you guys. Hope you're well.
Oh,
Morton,
we're cold.
Congratulations on being a finalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and well-deserved. I read last week the nearest anybody is to your point total is about 500. So I think that you're ensconced with the record forever. But I wanted to ask you, and I meant to ask you this last week when I talked to you, who called you to tell you you were a finalist? I know in baseball it's the president of the baseball writers. How does it work that in the for the NFL?
I was at the Walter Camp Football Foundation during last weekend when it was announced. So I was actually at a banquet at the time. So one of the people from Walter Camp came up to me and said he had just seen it on the NFL Network. So I didn't get a phone call from anybody associated with the Pro Football Hall of Fame or anything. That came a little bit later. So initially I was at an event, really kind of had forgotten about it, the 9 o'clock deadline or whatever, the selection at 9 o'clock, and then it just came and I was with a bunch of people talking and taking pictures and signing autographs and stuff. And so it just kind of flowed that way. We had a big party, so it was good.
Tom and Roger, I'll tell you one thing. That's a much better way than we normally get our experience. When they call us on the telephone, it's don't bother coming in.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I try. Hey, that's the beauty of caller ID now. I mean, you know, you know, meet me at the bell tower at noon, and then you would be there. But back in the old days, the rotary dial. Yeah.
My phone's always got to be on. I work for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and sometimes I get good calls, sometimes bad calls, ticket calls, but it's been fun. We have
you guys still have a hockey team in Tampa Bay?
Let me tell you, we've got a pretty good hockey team down here, and I don't know, our good friend Mr. Tortorella, he got in the wrong locker room there for a few minutes, Tommy.
we had the Thrashers, and they took off to Winnipeg. They went to Winnipeg, so.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right, the Thrashers, yeah.
But I was like, old-time hockey is like they have Don, Roger, and Morney. You remember the Barclay Players guys for St. Louis Blues, right? And I was at that one Sunday afternoon game. It's national televised. So what does Fred Sherrill send out? Kelly, Schultz, and Selesky. 30 seconds later, the gloves were off.
Well, I came back, guys. I'm a big Islanders fan. I have a couple of my buddies from Denmark that play for the Islanders, Frans Nielsen. And so I was with Frans a couple of weeks ago when they were playing at the old Coliseum, the Nassau Coliseum, which, of course, they're going to be going to Brooklyn to the Barclays Center next year and playing there where the Nets play. But it was really cool to be in that old building. I like old venues like the Lambeau Field in Green Bay and the old Candlestick and you know, the old parks. I actually played in the old Baltimore when it still was the Baltimore Colts. I played in the Metropolitan Stadium there. I just love the old stadiums, the old Dallas Cowboys Stadium with the hole in the roof so God could look down on his beloved Cowboys.
The interesting thing about football, they've made these great stadiums, and, of course, the Super Bowl a week from Sunday is a perfect example of it. They build these great big stadiums, and if you talk to really sports fans, older sports fans as we are, the great venues are the ones, you know, starting with the Plesser in Philadelphia for basketball, Chicago Stadium for hockey and basketball.
Boston,
those stadiums, and they're all gone.
Yeah.
Now they have all these monstrous stadiums where you're almost in a stock market.
It's about,
and you know what's funny,
Morgan,
you know, you played for the Falcons at the Georgia Dome, and that's going to get knocked down in a couple of years, and that's not that old. Geez.
I'll take you further back. I played against the Falcons when I was with the Saints at Fulton County before Turner Field was built, and now Turner Field is going to be pulled down.
Jeez. That's right.
How about that?
That's
the Braves
exactly
are moving
right
to Cobb County. And Turner Field was the old Olympic Stadium when we had the Olympics back, you know, in 2004, whatever it was. Yeah.
Sure.
And now that's going to be torn down, and the Georgia Dome's going to be down, and the building new venues for suite holders, big, you know, it's all about revenue. It's all about the corporate revenue and seat licenses and owning the parking concessions and all those things. So it's big business, you know.
You're going to be involved for things at the Super Bowl next week, as I recall. Like last year, I think it was the Taste of
I'm doing the Taste again. And then I'm in the bullpen. I'm in the holding pattern, guys, because the Hall's got me sequestered, or they got me close by a phone, I guess, at 5 p.m. Saturday, because that's when the final announcement is made on induction. So they got the 17 finalists in New York. Most of them are going to be close to Radio City Music Hall, where the NFL Honors Show is going to be televised and where the inductees will be introduced live on national TV that evening. But, of course, the ones that don't make it have to exit right quickly and gracefully so that the ones that did make it, it's painful. I mean, this is an arduous process because there's been guys on the finalist list 7, 8, 9, 10 years in a row. You're telling me every year they got to go through this? This is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
It's brutal. I mean, just I'm honored I made it to the 15. You know, don't get me wrong. I am. I'm humbled. I mean, that's great company. But having to go through this every year, you know, it's brutal. And I will be at the Taste in Brooklyn at that time. So if I do get selected, I guess I got to get quickly to Manhattan and do my Queen wave as best I can. But
well, we certainly wish you the best.
We're going to raise a lot of money.
Yeah,
you know, it's fun. It's a fun thing. It's a good problem to have, guys. But the Taste is going to be fantastic for hunger relief. I mean, we raised almost $1 million that Saturday, you know, for hunger relief. And I was just blown away by the fact that, like, one out of six Americans do not have adequate access to food. And that's one out of five children. And, you know, we got to do something about that. This is the greatest country on earth, and you know, you started your show with "God Bless America," and we're all patriots, and we got to do better than that. We have to help.
Exactly.
Like a buck. I mean, just a dollar can feed eight people. So next time people get their Starbucks with $3 or $4, not that you shouldn't do that. You know, remember, if $3 or $4 can buy you 30-35 meals, so. You know, mm-hmm. there's several ways that people can help, you know, if they want to. And I'd be happy to, if I can mention that, kickhungerchallenge.com. That's a big one where every NFL city can donate. Any of the fans listening can. You have one in Tampa, actually, Kick Hunger. And it'll go to that local food bank in Tampa. I don't know what the name of that is. Might be Second Harvest. Or it might be. I don't know what it is. But
it's
whatever is raised
Minnesota.
Through that Kick Hunger. Metropolitan, okay, so whatever is raised in Tampa through that kickhungerchallenge.com will go directly to that local food bank.
Wow.
It's kind of cool.
Hey, yeah. Bert, I got a couple of questions for you right now. If you want to come down and see the Islanders on the 27th, have Roger give me a call. We'll set you up for the media passing. Meet all the Islanders players that come down to Tampa March 27th. And what did you think about kicking two spots? I'll tell you these wonderful spots: Old Veterans Stadium and Old Cleveland Stadium. As a kicker, that must be the mess.
Oh man, Cleveland Stadium. If you were unlucky enough to be a visiting team there, and a lot of teams were, you would enter what was a black hole called a locker room. It was two levels, and it was about the size of my office I'm sitting in right now. And for 80 people, training staff, equipment guys, there was no run. They had turned the water off, so the showers had cold water, but just dripping. So imagine 80 guys after the game trying to shower. In Cleveland. It was brutal. And part of those seats, if you've ever been to Cleveland Stadium right there on Lake Erie, they had these big metal pillars that would hold up the upper deck. Well, if you sat behind that, you basically couldn't see the field. You had obstructed view. So whatever poor soul bought that season ticket was screwed. I mean, so my recollection of Cleveland was, of course, the dog pound and the fans and how adamant they were. And as can't tell you how many dog biscuits I've been hit with playing into that end zone. But I was just glad they were real and not metal, you know what I mean? So, because back then we were playing with leather helmets, so, you know, it was rough. But I do remember a 53-yarder I had with 2 seconds to go. We were down by 2 points, and Bob Phillips was the coach, and we didn't really know. Richard Todd was our quarterback, the old Jets quarterback. We didn't know if we were going to. It was like second year in the league, and it was raining, snowing sideways from the dog pound, and I had a 53-yard range of the open end, and Bum was like, well, do you think you can make it? I said, well, I'll give it a shot, and they go, well, I think our odds are better than a Hail Mary. We were down by 2 points. We had 3 seconds to go, and I could see all the fans were filing out of the stadium thinking the Browns had won. And and I went out there, and I hit the ball, and when I hit it, it kind of came out low. And then it turned sideways, and it just took off, and it actually hit the net. And I made it by like 6-7 yards, but it was like a low line drive, so it pierced the wind. I got really lucky with the ball strike, and we won the game. And everybody was just shocked.
Did you kick it off the skim of the infield? Because in those days they didn't, you know, they still had the baseball field there.
No, this was actually off grass. I found a piece of grass somewhere around that 43-yard line on the right hash, and the baseball field was in the other end, so I was lucky that I was going. Unlucky, I was going into the wind. Lucky, I had grass, or some semblance of grass. I think it was painted green. It was mud painted green.
That's right.
Well, that was always the interesting part about Yankee Stadium and Cleveland Stadium, and, of course, in Atlanta, too. I mean, you know, if you got unlucky
well,
and you got down at the baseball end, you really had to suffer.
Yeah. Philly was the worst. They, of course, Philly had their own jail in the stadium.
That's right.
They had their own. Yeah, they had their own holding cell for fans. That kind of gives you the level of it, intensity from those Philly fans.
Well, they also
we would come in. They would pull right up to the tunnel because if there was any gap, you know. They let us have it, so there was no, like, the buses to the locker room, to the field, to the locker room, to the buses. There was usually heavy police escorts in the, back in that day. That was South Philly, man. And
that's right.
and those boys had been going, you know, it was usually a noon kick, one o'clock kick, and those boys had probably just rolled from Saturday night right into Sunday, and we were visiting meat, you know what I mean? So it was, but that was a baseball field, and that was that old AstroTurf where they had big seams where they had patched the pitching mound and the bases had patched with. And so if you were unlucky to get a ball in the seam, you were screwed. I mean, you would have to move it laterally, but you could twist an ankle in those seams. They were so wide.
One game there where Baltimore refused to play, but you're exactly right. They took that dugout down the third base line out. And, of course,
it was
a little tough going that way. And I know that the Colts, and I know Roger will remember, I think Tommy will too, you know, they came in to play a game there, and they said, "We're not playing. No question about this. We're not going to play on this surface."
Well, that night, Brian Billick, you're exactly right, Don. He said, "No, we're not playing." And then I was with one of 18 people on the media elevator that got stuck on the way down to the ground floor. So we had 17 guys and Lucy Jones, and she had a bottle of water. But, of course, nobody was going to. You know, we were hoping we'd get out, but it took us about, I think, 45 minutes before the fire department got us out.
That's terrible.
I don't know if you guys remember. Do you guys remember when Green Bay was splitting time between Green Bay and Milwaukee? And so
were
in the old Milwaukee Brewers Stadium.
Stadium.
And so we're playing the Packers there. Same sideline, guys. Same sideline for the home visiting team.
That's right. I remember that now.
So we had guys, I mean, getting a little too close to the other. I mean, it got a little ugly, a little testy once in a while there on the same sideline. I mean, back and forth because there was no separation.
Wasn't Tiger Stadium in Detroit the same way? They had that you were on the same side, both teams?
Well, I don't know. We played in the Pontiac Silverdome.
Picnic either. I did a lot of games in that Pontiac Silverdome. First of all, it's tough to get there. And if you got there, it was not the greatest place in the world to begin with.
No, it was a hike.
That's right.
It was like you would fly into Metro, and then you would have to drive, I don't know, 45
That's
minutes
right.
up to Pontiac.
And
it looked like this spaceship out of nowhere, just sitting out in the middle of nowhere.
When they had the Super Bowl, right, Morton? The year they had the Super Bowl,
Detroit,
there was a blizzard.
I know in Minneapolis they did at the Metrodome. I remember the Redskins were playing, and I remember there were a bunch of Native Americans striking, and they were out there in their gear. I guess they were upset about the name of the Redskins or whatever, and I said they got to be freezing because it was minus 20, and they had all their headgear and stuff on, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, man, guys picked a bad venue to kind of do a protest, you know.
That's right.
need to pick an indoor venue, man, because that was cold, but Yeah, great memories from everywhere. I mean, there was, I guess what I take away from it is not really the stuff, it's more the memories and the relationships with the guys and the stories and the and the characters. We had some characters. We had the Rob Nairn watch. Now, Rob Nairn was a linebacker. We used to have training camp in Vero Beach, and Rob Nairn was always late to training camp, and we would have a map of the United States. He lived in Denver in the off season. He had an old Pontiac that he would drive to Vero Beach. He was scared of flying. And so he would call from a, he didn't have a phone. Back then there was no phones. He'd pay phone. Okay, I'm in Oklahoma, you know. So we put a little dot there, you know. The Rob Nairn report, and he would finally make it to training camp. And Bump Phillips, of course, would have all the picker. He called it picking and grinning, and it was all the country western singers from Nashville would fly down on John Meekham's plane and become honorary coaches during training camp, which was like 5 weeks in Vero Beach, Florida, the old Dodger town where the Dodgers used to, you know. And Bum would bring him in there, and at night we would have concerts. I mean concerts where it would be card playing and these guys picking and grinning and plenty of libations flowing, and it wasn't Gatorade, let me tell you. And it was but we worked hard, you know, and played hard at night, and man, he was fun to play for. I hated to see him pass this last year, and he was what a great man he was. He had some, he had some unbelievable ways to deal with the press. George Rogers was our running back, and George Rogers came in out of shape. He was a first round pick. He came out of shape. He was at South Carolina Heisman. He comes in so out of shape, and we had to run the mile and a half to see what kind of shape we're in prior to training camp starting. Halfway through, George falls out, can't finish the mile and a half, and all the press was all over Bum afterwards, and he just sat there with his 10-gallon hat and chewing tobacco and said, well, and they were all like, hey, what are you going to do? Your first-round pick can't run, you know, can't even finish a conditioning run, mile and a half. And Bum just looked at him and spit in his cup, and he said, well, next time it's second and a mile and a half, I won't put him in. That was brilliant. He would deal with the media and disarm him, you know. He was just great. He was great that way.
I wish Aaron Andrews had had that luxury on Sunday afternoon. I never saw an interview where someone was more afraid to interview anybody than that one.
Well, she practiced her segues real quick.
Back to you upstairs. Back up to you upstairs. I thought she was going to run the quarter miles with the microphone in her hand.
Sure.
I thought I was watching WWE.
Yeah, Sherman got a little excited. Yeah, got a little excited, Sherman, there. He's, don't you love when athletes do that? There's two things I love when they say they're the greatest and when they talk about themselves in the third person singular. Then I get goosebumps when they do that.
And more than I thought I was watching.
What was the closest that I can remember was when Tom Brookshire it did the interview. Who was that, Don, or the Cowboys? And there was just dead air from Tom's questions. Remember that?
I don't know.
Oh, I remember very well that. Was it Jones that he was interviewing?
It could have been. It could have been.
You got me, but you're right. Tom just stood there with the microphone, asked the questions, and nobody said anything.
Uncomfortable
silence. You probably remember that more than, you know, it goes back early in your career when that happened.
Oh, yeah, you know, things happen where you always have some interviews where you go, man, I should have said that. Or the worst as an athlete is if they catch you right after where you're emotional, you know, you're kind of in your adrenaline's pumping. That's when you're most vulnerable. So I've learned over the years, man, I got to just take 10 minutes, take a deep breath, and don't say anything. You know, let me think this through before I start blabbering. And I think a lot of the young, you know, a lot of the guys now, they need to learn that, that because back then, of course, we didn't have social media. We didn't have Twitter, Facebook.
Right.
We didn't have anything. We didn't have Deadspin, you know. We didn't have any of this stuff where it can be regurgitated ad nauseum. And now, if you say anything, you know,
it's only on 150,000
times. It's all over there.
Right.
It's all over YouTube, whatever. You're out there, you know. So you got to really be conscious of your brand and how you conduct your business now as an athlete and as a person. I mean, yeah.
Exactly. It's this thing's going crazy. Morton, we want you to come down for that Islander game. Roger, just give me a call. We'll set you up to play some golf and go to that Islander
game
that night.
When are they playing? In March sometime? That'd be
March
fun.
20.
Yeah,
I got looking at it right now on my calendar. It's going to be March. Here it is right here. I'm just going to.
Can I wear my Islanders jersey, though?
Sure, that's right. Meet my boss, meet the owner. March 27th, Roger, give my number, and we'll come on down for the game. Will you
maybe we'll come down together.
Sure, why don't you guys come down together?
That would be great.
Yeah.
Mark, are you going to be in Radio Row next week at the Sheridan?
I'm waiting to hear back from my sponsor. I haven't heard yet.
Okay.
Initially,
well,
I was supposed to
be
there all day
on
Friday
Tuesday.
Afternoon.
Okay, I'll be up on
Friday
Tuesday. I'm leaving Friday, but hopefully we'll get the hook up. And I wish I was up there on Saturday for the, for your taste of the NFL, because I know you do a great job on that.
Oh gosh, yeah.
I'm in there. My wife and I are in there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then I got to fly to Chicago for another appearance Sunday that I have on Monday morning.
Let's hope you don't hit one of those storms that we've had all this. The airlines are having a terrible time.
Yeah.
I know. They're supposed to have a big one up there for the Super Bowl, man. I hope that's not the case for them.
All of America is praying that there's a gigantic snowstorm and the temperature is about 25 degrees or 20 degrees so they can say, see, we told you that game should never be played there. And the people in New York are saying, the people in New York are saying just the opposite. Get the game here. We don't care whether it snows or rain or what it does.
That's right.
I know. Tampa's a great spot. Tampa's a great spot for the Super Bowl like New Orleans is. And But when they build a new stadium, they're awarded a Super Bowl. That's just the way it goes.
Right.
That's going to be a mistake. But
$1.6 billion, you ought to get something.
That's right. Well,
8 home games, that's all you get.
Teams freezing their butts off on February 2nd. That's what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, but the commissioner's going to sit in the stands with the fans. He's not going to sit in one of the suites.
Good one.
He wants to be sure he gets the real feel of the game.
Is that right? I don't think Roger Goodell's going to be sitting anywhere outside
No. He's already had a press conference and said that he is going to sit outside. He's not going to sit in a heated booth. He's going to sit with the fans outside.
Get the snowballs ready.
Two guys with portable fans right behind them, blowing hot air on them.
They're heaters, right?
Snowballs out.
I want to see if he's going to be there in the second half.
He'll have
don't show him
Iola
two or three shots
man.
In the first half. I want to see where he is in the second half.
Right, right.
get the snowballs ready, fans in New York.
He had to go to the men's room.
That's right. He has to go face it first hand up there. But more, Frank and I will get the purr chain going for you and the – we'd love you to have you come on next week. Tell us about your food fest, how it went up there. Is Roger sound good for you guys to come on next week?
Well, I'm going to be up there, so hopefully I get to hook up with Morton when he gets up there. And
great.
You know, before he gets away, I just thought it was a great signing effective February 3rd, Morton, of Scott Pioli as Thomas Dimitroff's assistant. I thought that was a great move by the Falcons today.
They made some good moves, and Mike Tice as the offensive line coach as well.
Right.
I like that move.
Yeah.
I think that's
excellent.
Really got to do something drastic sometime. Not drastic, but you got to be proactive. You got to go out, and Dimitrov's known for doing good research and knowing his personnel and not scared to pull the trigger. And so he did that on Julio, and that'll turn out to be a great pick down the road. You just got to stay healthy, but I like what he's doing right now in the front office and coaching, And I spoke to Mike Smith about a week ago, and they rebooted the computer, man, and they're reloading and going, and
good.
Very competitive, man. They'll be right back where they need to be.
Wow. Good. That's great. Great. That's great news. Mike Smith's a great guy.
Yeah.
So Frank and I will get the perch chain going out for you.
Yeah.
We're going to get the perch chain out. We want you to be in that Hall of Fame, and we get the Frank and I will get the perch chain going out. Can we get you on next week? Talk about.
Oh, he called the nuns up at the Priory to ask him to do it. Of course, if you make it work, I got to tell you, it cost me another half a beer.
Oh, no.
Every time I ask the girls to spray for something, they tell me I owe them another keg.
You mean just a half? Can you go for a little more than that?
No, a keg, a full keg. That's what they call it, a half.
Keg's good.
Morgan,
we'll catch up
down
the road, guys. I appreciate it very much.
Take care, Morgan. We'll be talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
And good luck. We'll be praying
good luck
for you.
Right. Morgan.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very, very much for being with us.
Take care.
I
enjoyed it very
much.
Bye, guys.
Thank you. Could have for a better guy, Roger. My God,
he's a terrific guy. And I'll tell you, when you get to know him, and, I don't know him that well, but I've been over to his house, and he's just a terrific, down-to-earth guy, wonderful family man. And, I just am hoping that he gets in because
his
25 years, and I'm looking at the percentages and the teams that he was with. He was with the predominantly winning teams over those years.
Right. Exactly, up there. Can we get him on next week and when you're up in New York?
Well, we'll try. He said he's coming
commitment.
Up on Thursday, but Frank's got his number, and
we'll
can have one for a couple minutes next week, too.
Yeah, we'd love to get him on. He's fantastic. Great person to get him on up there. I think we're going to return the hockey, Frank, and we're going to have Bobby the Chief Taylor on shortly up there and that. So
great.
Hopefully you've been talk some hockey up there and that. Eric Oakson and Roy be coming on following that. So, as usual,
I'll be on for the media center, next Wednesday. And I talked to George
O'Gorman
of the Trentonian today. And I'll tell you, cut me off. I mean, I just real quick.
Don,
of course, and I are very aware of No Sean Marino from high school.
Right.
And it's going to be fun. Being at a press conference with No-Sean, and George and I have already orchestrated how we're going to ask him the question about when he stepped out of bounds, Don. Because
my grandson gave you a recap on that when you were up for
it. So did George.
That's right.
And the new superintendent of schools at Ewing, Mr. Nitty, he was standing there, and you could see his print right into the white. It should have been called out of bounds. So we'll have some fun.
Oh, you got to get him, Roger, right? You got to go up and get him.
Well, as Morgan said, Roger, those are the kind of,
the
better stories, to be honest with you. The stories of the game are sometimes better than the game, and that's one that has followed him now for almost 10 years. So, it's just another one of those stories, one of those oddities that happened that you never forget.
I'd asked that question about Cleveland Stadium, and Morton was right because you go up to that outside the visiting locker room. It's just a $500 suit hung up by one nail. Then they had to go downstairs and underneath the visiting dugout. Oh, what a mess that was. And you imagine up there how cold it was and then warm was it after the exhibition game and all the bodies up there and that. But I just wanted to hear what he thought of Cleveland Stadium. And that was my answer's been answered for – I was going to ask him for all the years I've covered him and, known him as a player watching on TV at a football game. That's the one question I wanted to ask him about Cleveland Stadium, kicking in that win. So, Mike, thank you, Roger. My questions were answered.
Hey, Lou Grosso kicked in that win for
Tommy,
a lot of years,
Tommy. Think about Stadium, where we grew up. And the Phillies didn't have the tunnel to get to the clubhouse. They keep the fans away while they went from the dugout to the clubhouse. But yet the visiting team on the first base side, they had the tunnel. Is that right, Don?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. I remember in Citizens Bank Park, they had the double-decker. Remember the bullpen? And they had to change that with them throwing everything down on top of everybody.
Right.
That's right. I remember that. But I still think the funniest thing was, the next time you see a Rays game at Tropicana Field, right, if you ever they don't show it on TV, but I'm sewing there live. I asked one of the writers, Mark Tompkin, you should do a story. Fernando Roddy always went out. We have to go in the stands for the restroom up there. And I said, I'm going to go out and see what these players are actually going to be doing out there. Because they leave the ballpark area, and, you know, first thing they're going to do, if they have some money, buy a hot dog or a hamburger up there. And here, the story from Cleveland Stadium, a good friend of mine, Jesse Orozco, he was telling me that they get hungry out there and thirsty out there, okay? This is the old days of ballparks, you know. And the hot dog guy would come around and say, hey, I'll take a hot dog. What do you want on it? Mustard? And he said, mustard? And here you go, here's a baseball for it. So he got to know the vendor real good. And one day he had to come in and pitch at an upset stomach. So he gave up a home run ball just to get him out of the game. True story.
It was a bad dog.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that when you look at some of these old ballparks, and, of course, you know, for years they had so many great teams with Jim Brown and all, and you sort of got by. With Municipal Stadium out there. For baseball, it never was any good to begin with when Bill Veeck was there. But, you know, we give the owner a lot of heat for moving the team to Baltimore. But he did everything in his power, in all honesty, to try to get them to build a new ballpark. In Cleveland, they just wouldn't do it. You know, and that's the same thing that happened in Baltimore. I'm not an Ursay fan. But the thing was, they wouldn't build a new park in Baltimore either. And, you know, you just couldn't play anymore in those old parks. They just, as he said, you had enough room for about 18 guys in a 60-man dressing room.
Yep. I get agreed
with
you.
Well,
that's
right. Hey, Tommy, we got Eric on with us. Eric is joining us from Tampa Trip.
I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine, Mr. Eric Erickson, does Double E. He does a great job of covering the Tampa Bay Lightning. Eric, welcome aboard. You're talking to Donnie Roger, or Legends in Atlanta and Fed Off. You welcome aboard, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
I guess the question of the day, John Tortorella. He's up to his old tricks again.
Is that a question, or is John Tortorella the answer? And then we can be like the Great Zarnak and kind of fill in the question there, huh?
This is Jeopardy.
We're on Jeopardy.
The answer is...
Well, oh, God. If John Tortorella doesn't watch that, it'll be final Jeopardy for him.
Well, it was great to see Steven Stamkos back on the ice skating. I don't know how quickly he's going to be able to come back and play, but geez, he seems to me to be making some great, great progress. How about that?
He is, he's gathered a lot of nicknames during this process, and one of them is Wolverine. Because now he has that metal rod in his leg, and he regenerates, obviously, very, very quickly. It really is incredible to see. And, you know, you can chalk some of that up to the youth. I mean, he's only 23 years old. He won't be 24 until next month. We all know we heal much better when we're younger. That stuff, you tend to recover from that stuff quicker. And the other point is, and this is actually amazing if you think about it, if anybody remembers the video from that day, and watching his leg slam into that post, you knew something was wrong. But Steven tried to get up. And when he tried to get up, he actually made the injury worse, which actually helped it heal better. Because they had to do the surgery to put that titanium rod in his leg. And because they had to do that, it allowed him to get back on his feet quicker. And we all know the scene 2 weeks after the surgery. He walks into the press conference where he speaks to the media for the first time since it happened. So it's kind of ironic in a way that by damaging the leg maybe a little bit more than it would have been, he's actually being able to recover a little bit quicker. And I would have to say I would not be shocked at all to see him return sometime in the next 2.5 weeks before the Olympic break, so he'll – I have every – belief and thought that he will be with Team Canada when they leave for Sochi.
Wow.
Amazing.
That's fantastic. Eric, you do a great job of covering the Lightning for the Tampa Tribune. I read you every day online or paper, no matter where I try to get a paper or copy up there. How would you rate this Lightning team compared to 2004 and 2011 right now as we stand right now?
Wow, you're going into sacred ground there, Tommy.
I know.
I think the 2004 team, obviously being a team that won the championship, you can't say it came out of the blue, but in some ways it did. I don't think anybody saw that team taking off the way they did in the second half, even after they got the experience the year before of a lot of those young players, and Vinny LeCavalier, Brad Richards, Dan Boyle, Marty St. Louis. All those guys got a taste of the playoffs the year before, got some success when they beat Washington in the first round. So that was a special team. 2011, I think, really caught people by surprise with the way that they played. I think that this team this year is kind of the building blocks and the foundation that Steve Yzerman had in mind when he took over this job. Because you look at the players who are contributing, and again, we have to keep in mind they've done this without Steven Stamkos for two months now. You know, it's the foundation of what they've built this organization on. Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat, Radko Gudas, Mark Barberio, Richard Ponick, you know, a lot of these young guys that helped them win a championship in the American Hockey League 2 years ago have come in and they've stepped into their roles in the NHL. They've actually had to have their role sort of accelerated because of the absence of Steven Stamkos, and they've thrived. So they are definitely overachieving this year, probably ahead of schedule, but I don't think it's as much of a surprise just because of the young players that have had success as pros in their minor league level. They're just doing it now at the NHL level.
But working inside out, I think you have to look at the goaltending, because the goaltending's been a disaster for 4 or 5 years, and you know, we had Tommy's number one analyst on with us a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about, you know, goaltending is got to be good. You're going to win in this league, you got to have a goaltender.
Absolutely, and that's the first place you have to look at it, is the play of Ben Bishop and what he's meant to this team. You know, their defensive, the way they play defense is a lot different than last year. They don't hang the goalie out to try as much as maybe they did the previous two seasons. So they're not facing the grade-A quality chances, you know, night after night. But having said that, Ben Bishop's been brilliant. His numbers are as good as they are for a reason. He's a Vezina candidate for a reason, because he's been that good. He's been such a calming influence back there. And you watch the way he plays goal. At 6'7", he really takes advantage of his size. He doesn't flop around the net. He's always square to the puck. He's always in the right position. And when you do that, you know, shooters don't have a whole lot of holes to kind of shoot for. You know, they have nothing to aim at. And because of that, that's why he's been so good. And he's been the backbone of this team since October. And he just gives them a different sort of confidence when he's in net, because there's a different way they play with Ben Bishop as compared to Anders Lindback. And, you know, if you're going to look at any position right off the bat, obviously Ben Bishop is a big reason they're at where they're at.
Well, the other thing is that, you know, not only is he 6'7 and big, with all that equipment they wear now, he's double the size of most goaltenders.
Well, you know, and the irony there is that they reduced some of the size of the goalie equipment this year, but because of how big he is, he didn't lose as much size off his pads. I mean, the leg pads are really a big thing that they cut down on this year.
Right.
But because of his size, he really didn't lose a whole lot of what he's able to cover, so... You know, I don't know if that's a reason why he's kind of taken a step forward this year, but whatever it is, he has been an absolute rock back there for them all year.
And how about the play of Victor Hedman? He's having career numbers both in goals and points, and this is Victor Hedman's having such a great year and his great influence on the whole defense right now.
Yeah, you know, I remember speaking of John Tortorella, he always used to talk about young defensemen, and the threshold where they really started to figure it out was between 250 and 300 games. Well, Victor Hedman just played his 300th game the other night, and maybe that's why he's taken off, but his game has gone to another level this year. He has sort of really started to fill out the projections that were made of him when he was a second overall pick back in 2009, and he's taken such a huge step forward that he's solidified their defense. He's so mobile. He's so big. He's learned to play defense in his own end. And because of the system that they play under John Cooper and his staff, he has the freedom to kind of push forward, join the rush, go down low, be in front of the net, and that's helped with the offensive numbers. So his game, he's really started to round it out. on both ends of the ice, and it's just he's just gone to another level this year. And he just turned 23. We have to remember sometimes these players are so young. He just turned 23 last month.
Wow, because I think he's going to be like another Bobby Orr or probably Paul Coffey when you think about it. Because like way he's been handling the puck, coming up in the power plays, keeping the puck in, clearing the puck out of the zone, and Rocco Gudas reminds me of a Pavel Kobin, the way he's doing for the Lightning. Get those guys in front of the crease, give them a hit to remind them by. Those have been the key ingredients of this hockey team, Eric.
Yeah, you know, Rocco Gudas supplies something that this team doesn't have, and that's a physical player. And you know, that's not doesn't equate itself to fighting. He will do that, but that's not the kind of player that Rocco Gudas is. He plays the game hard. He plays it fair, and he's the kind of player that when he's out on the ice, the other team notices. If you think of some of the hits he's had this year, the hit he had on Teemu Selänne back in November, it was a good, fair front hit. It wasn't anything dirty about it. It was just a good, hard hit. Kyle Brozniak of Minnesota, he had a nice, big, strong hip check along the boards on him. That's the presence that he brings. And, you know, he's rounded out his game to where that's not the only thing that he does well. He's really improved in his first pass out of the zone. He's really improved in his defensive positioning. He's gotten some power play time this year. So it's because of players like that that have stepped up. As we talked about earlier with the younger players coming in and sort of assuming a role with this team, he's one of those guys that's really helped solidify that back end.
Well, you haven't joined us that often, but you must remember – there's one person that is a connoisseur of defensemen. It's Tommy. Tommy gave us a whole season last year of the lack of defense played by the Lightning, and now it's his strong suit. Now, have you reevaluated your position, Tommy?
Well, it's just the way they've been playing. I mean, Eric can vouch for me. The way the Lightning's been playing, the boards and everything else that way, the Lightning's worst defenseman in Philadelphia, Andre Mazaris. When he got on the ice, Eric sent me upstairs in the press box. I started shaking my head, dropping pencils, kicking trash cans, and going the way around there and that. But no, our defense, Eric, you don't see me kicking trash cans or dropping pens or being disgusted. Between the periods, I'm more calm and relaxed. But when Mazaris is out there, I was just going nuts out there. So you see me, I'm more calmer upstairs, Eric. You know that.
But you're still upset about the officiating, right, Tommy?
Oh, God, I got to be good about the officiating because Don Kuharsky sits right in front of me. He sits in Eric's room. I could be right in front of me, and I got to be whisper stuff down there and that. But, oh, no. And we had Phil on a couple weeks ago, and I told Phil, when F Troop comes in, that Sergeant or Worker, Corporal Agon, that's another bad officiating crew. Then you got Lego Upper, No Go Lego. He weighed Hassenfrat. So, Eric, whose turn is going to be a bad official tonight? I think you could be F Troop. Could F Troop be returning to the form tomorrow night?
It's been inconsistent this year. I really hasn't mattered who's been on the ice. It's kind of disheartening in a way. But getting back to the defense real quick, just to touch on that point again, what's amazing about that this year is they didn't really address the defense in free agency over the summer. The only guy they brought in was Valtteri Filppula, and he's a center. So basically it's the same defensive core that's back from last year, Sammy Salo, Matt Carl, Victor Hedman, Rocco Gudas. But yet the numbers are so astounding, and Ben Bishop's been a big part of that. But it's just the system they play. They don't, like I said, they don't hang their goaltender out to dry as often. They just play a very sound game that the forwards have bought in, and that really helps the defensive core.
Eric, I'd like to welcome a special guest. One of your colleagues joins us every week, Mr. Roy Cummings. Roy, you're talking to Double E, Don, Roger, myself. So we call this the Tampa Tribune Hour right now. Guys, welcome aboard, Roy.
Thanks for having me, guys. Eric, how you doing, buddy?
Good, Wayne. What's going on?
Hanging out, trying to decompress a little bit from a difficult season, but you're in the middle of yours, so... I feel for you, pal. You got a ways to go, but you got a break coming up. That's good. You've earned it.
Well, thank you.
The Tribune Hour keeps on going on, guys. This is awesome up there and that. So I love it down there. We talk hockey, football. We have this is the hockey roundtable. Eric goes on like that, but Eric, who do What team you think in Eastern Conference is going to be the tough for the Lightning team to beat? Everybody could chime on this. I'm going to say Boston again, and I think if we could beat Boston, we'll be in a Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, Boston is definitely the toughest competition out there, especially with the way the realignment is set up, where you basically have to play out of your division now. If Tampa is going to get out of the division, they're most likely going to have to go through Boston. You know, let's assuming they make the playoffs, and then that seems pretty okay to assume that at this point. But Boston is just a team that gives them fits. And if you look at the three meetings they've had this year, they've been shut out twice by the Bruins, and the other one they only scored one goal. So in three games against the Bruins, they've only scored one time, and that's a concerning thing. They had opportunities on the power play. They can't score. They're a strong five-on-five team, which is also Boston's strength. They can't score on them. So that's going to be the real test. There's only one more meeting this year between these two teams. It comes in March. It's here in Tampa. That's going to be a big, big test to see where this team is when they go up against and face the Bruins again.
Eric, when I know you got ready for the hockey game tomorrow morning, looking forward to having a French roast with you. I hope there's donuts tomorrow morning or bagels or something like that. I've been looking forward
donuts
to the way
Danishes.
Home.
Danishes.
Yes, the cheese Danish gets me through the day. All that sugar gets me through the day for the hockey game that night. Eric, thanks for coming on board. We'll have to get you on during the Olympic break and then talk some more hockey. God bless, and I'll see you tomorrow at the coffee table.
All right. Thanks, Tommy. Thanks, guys.
Good to have you on.
Hey, Roy, how about a little special surprise for you tonight, huh?
Yeah, it's very nice. Eric does a heck of a job.
Oh, I tell
Roy, we had Morton Anderson on, you know, one of the finalists for the Hall of Fame, and what a great career he had, 25 years in the NFL. And I guess you saw today the Falcons made an interesting move getting Paoli to be the assistant GM as soon as his contract's over February 3rd with NBC and also with SiriusXM.
Yeah, they kind of created a position for him there. I when the Bucks were still looking for their general manager, there was a lot of talk about Lionel Vitale getting that spot here in Tampa, and I know a lot of people thought that what was going to happen there was Lionel Vitale might move on to Tampa, and then Scott Pioli just moved right into his spot. But obviously, they want Scott in a position there somehow because they, you know, in essence, I think created a position for him. Did they not, making him assistant general manager? That's a new spot
exactly.
In the organization, isn't it?
How do you feel about what the Bucks did as well at finally getting themselves a general manager and lining things up?
I'm sorry, what was that?
What do you think about the Bucks with the same situation?
I like the pick. Again, I don't know a lot about him, but you know, based on what I've read. I know the Bucks were very excited about the fact that not only, you know, do they think he's a good talent evaluator, which I think has got to be the primary concern about bringing in a general manager in this case. But I know that they were excited about the fact that he's been involved seemingly since he's been in the league with building Super Bowl teams. He's been a part of four different Super Bowl teams in three cities. And, you know, that kind of speaks something. He's obviously seen teams built, and he's had a hand in building those teams, built into championship contending teams. So I'm excited about that. It is going to be his first go-around in terms of running a draft by himself. He's going to be in charge of free agency. And, obviously he and Lovie Smith will work together on a lot of issues and come to an agreement on most players. But, I think it's a good choice. I think he's one of the young up-and-coming guys, and I'm anxious to see how he does and, see what direction they put the team in.
I thought one of the best things they said during a press conference was about how well they'll be able to work together, that Lovie will have complete control over the people that are on the field and who's going to start and who's going to do whatever, and that they're going to work together, as you indicate, not only on free agency, but also on which way they're going to go on the draft. It seems like they have a good working relationship before it even gets underway.
Yeah, it kind of has to be that way, really. And in today's NFL, you pretty much have to do that. You've got to work together on everything. You know, a lot of people are making a lot of noise about Lovie having control over the 53-man roster. Look, you guys have been around the league nowadays it comes the 53, you know, probably the last three or four players on the roster come down to players that you're trying to decide, hey, can we keep this linebacker over this receiver, or should we keep this linebacker over this receiver, or, you know, do we have room for this extra quarterback? They're really not that difficult. The decisions are not that difficult, and they usually have a lot to do with just filling out a special teams unit. So I think a lot has been made about the control that Lovie Smith is going to have over the 53-man roster. He's not going to be the one making up the team necessarily. He's going to have a say in that, and he should. You know, I think if you can find people that can work together, that's when things work the best. You know, I don't really believe in one man having all the power. I think we all know that two and three and four heads are better than one, and I think most teams are going in that direction. And the coaches should have control over who is on the field on Sundays for the most part. And Lovie Smith will have that. He should have control over who's on his roster, you know, out of the 60 or 70 players that they'll have to choose from at the end of the day. And again, that's another situation where usually the four or five of the guys that end up getting cut, first of all, eight of them end up on your practice squad or close to it. And then very close, you know, closely after that, anytime an injury occurs, you usually have a situation where someone, you know, is brought back right away. So the decisions are not that difficult, and I don't think it's that's going to be the area where the teams will or the two parties will have any trouble. I really don't.
You know, Roy, Tommy's Cleveland Browns seem to have a real problem with coaches pulling their names out of their hat to
I'll
be considered for that head coaching job.
You are absolutely right. They have got a major problem on their hands there right now, guys. And the situation, obviously, you know, and I was a little concerned that the Bucs might face a little bit of this. They didn't. I think things obviously have worked out very well for them in terms of, you know, they brought in Lovie Smith. But he clearly wanted to be here. But I think maybe, you know, they were kind of running up against a very similar situation or potential problem, letting go of a coach after just 2 years. You know, you let go of a coach after only one year or 2 years, and in the case of the, obviously, the Browns, after 1 year, that's a problem, guys. That is a major problem.
Yep.
And there's no question that that's where Cleveland is, and they're having a hard time right now. Getting that situation rectified. So, you know, we'll see what they end up with, but I'm not sure it's going to be it's certainly, I mean, what are they on, about their 10th candidate now? So they got some real issues there.
Well, you know, I thought it was interesting. Joe Banner was quoted as saying he wanted to get rid of Andy Reid after his first year with the Eagles, but he was overridden by Jeff Lurie. So maybe, you know, a lot of things are coming out now about Joe Banner over the years that maybe we didn't know before.
Well, you know, again, and you know, this all goes back to what I've talked about with you guys many times already. It's about this whole thing about this lack of patience that teams seem to have nowadays. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand it. I don't see how, you know, you can think one day that this is our guy. This is our guy, and we're going forward with him, and everything's going to be fine. And then within a year, you decide, oh, you know what, we made a mistake. Now, I mean, unless there's something really, really that everybody can see that's wrong, I just don't see it. I don't understand the lack of patience. I think it's a real problem. And you know what? The Cleveland Browns, I think they've created the situation that they're in themselves. And you know what? They'll just have to deal with it somehow. They're not going to get a quality candidate, that's for sure. It doesn't necessarily mean the guy is not going to succeed, but my guess is he won't, and you know, I think the problem is that they got poor upper management. They just don't really know what the heck it is they're trying to do. They'll probably draft another quarterback. They'll probably try to get Johnny Manziel. He'll be perfect for them because at least he'll get the fan base excited. But you know what? I don't know if that guy's going to be an NFL quarterback, and they'll probably regret that after 2 years and start all over again 2 years from now.
Well, I think another great example of that, Roy, is what's happened in Oakland. I mean, they change coaches every 18 months, and they haven't had a winning team in an awfully long time.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I say Oakland. I think they're in the same boat.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
They do the exact same thing. Every 18 months, they change coaches.
Well, I'm pretty sure I told you guys this, that I think I told you guys earlier that a couple weeks ago, when the Bucks were still, or two, three, you know, about a month ago, when the Bucks were looking for their coach, that the problem was that I was concerned that if they didn't get somebody right away, that they'd end up in the same situation that Cleveland and Oakland are in, where you know, you're changing coaches every 2-3 years, or every 1 or 2 years, really, and that you get that reputation. And the next thing you know, people don't want to come. They don't want to be a part of your program, and that's the worst thing you can have. You cannot have a situation where people don't want to be there. You want people, you know, wanting to come there and believing in that you guys are headed in the right direction, that you got a good program going. And I think it's pretty obvious that right now, Cleveland for sure, and Oakland is another one, that those are questions that people have a lot of questions about. Those are two teams that people have a lot of questions about.
Right, they had a video up in Cleveland. They had a video up in Cleveland. These three little kids said, come on, Browns fans, we want Jim Tressel. They start singing that, we want Jim Tressel as our coach.
Yeah,
said, oh,
well,
no, what am I watching
here? Because he won him a national championship or was very successful at Ohio State. But guess what? My guess is Jim Tressel doesn't want them. And that's the problem. You know, the people that you want don't want you, and if that's the case, you're in a bad situation, boys.
Roy, let me ask you this: a little different field, jump to another team. Were you at all surprised at the talent differential between Denver and New England, and also how Belichick addressed the hit on the field after it was over?
Yeah, first on the talent thing, I was not surprised that the game went the way it did. I have not been a big believer in the Patriots this year. I think they've done a miraculous job, getting to where they were, considering all the injuries that they had, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Losing Vince Wilfork on the defensive side, obviously a big hit, but all the problems that they've dealt with this year. I was not a big believer that this team was going to go very far. I know it's all about the quarterback, and Brady's as good as there is, but I really thought that it wouldn't be too difficult if you could somehow get to Brady and harass him, that that thing would all kind of come falling down on him, and it did. So I wasn't that surprised by that. And you know what? To be honest with you, I guess I probably wasn't surprised by Belichick's whining about that hit either. you know, we're in a league now where some people think it's become touch football, and so somebody delivers a hit, and because somebody gets hurt, now it's a bad hit. Well, you know what? Just bury it. I don't want to hear it. You know, I'm tired. Mm-hmm. You know, they want it to be a physical game, and then when it gets physical and somebody gets hurt, well, then they say it's a dirty game. Don't give me that. It's the game. If it's running a pick, then you know what? Go to the competition committee and stop complaining about the time that the competition committee takes to come up with rules. Go to the competition committee and say, and show them the play and say, this has got to be eliminated. This has got to become a 15-yard penalty because players are getting hurt and it's dangerous and all that stuff. But, you know, I got to be honest. I mean, the view that we saw as fans watching the game on TV, it just looked to me like Welker was running a route and he happened to collide with a guy that was trying to defend somebody else running a route.
Mm-hmm,
I didn't
right.
notice that he was in. And I think it's going to be very hard to prove that he was not running a route. I assume that that's what his, you know, primary function was, is to somehow get open. I don't think it was to go knock Tlaib out of the way. But
especially a player that gets hurt as much as he does. That's the last thing I would think he'd want to do.
Right, that's the other, exactly. I mean, we know here in Tampa how, I guess I'll use the word fragile, Aqib Tlaib is. First of all, he's very fragile mentally. We all know that. But, you know, physically, he was always dealing with hamstrings, knees, ankles.
Mm-hmm.
He always had some kind of an issue, and it was pretty consistent. So the fact that he got hurt, you know, hey, my guess is he might have even had something a little bit before that he was dealing with. Maybe he had some sore ribs from, you know, practice or something, but you know, I'm not surprised. But, again, I'm not surprised by Belichick's whining.
Well, you know, maybe if it was another player other than Welker, Belichick would have had a different point of view.
I'm sorry, say that again, Roger?
No, I said maybe Belichick would have had a different point of view if it was another player other than Welker, because he and Welker have some issues.
Yeah, right. Obviously, you know, Welker decided to move on when they would have loved to have had him. and held on to him, and they obviously needed him this year. Boy, I think it's a different Patriot football team if Welker's there at some point this season, but and certainly on that day if he's on the other side of the field. But, yeah, I think you're right. And obviously, they, you know, they had nothing to say to each other after the game, apparently. Welker, I guess, ran down Belichick and tried to say, you know, tried to say something to him, and you know, probably just, you know, good luck in the future or whatever. And Belichick wanted nothing to do with it. So, you know, I guess if you're not part of the program anymore, and he's got nothing to do with you. That's nice to know.
Well, yeah, going to another new topic, and that would be if I have to listen to one more telecast with them telling me that the evaluation of the referees proves that these are the best six referees who are going to do a game, and then we have to sit through that San Francisco game, which was an absolute. I'm not rooting for San Francisco. I don't care whether San Francisco wins or who wins. Doesn't make a difference to me. But holy smokes, they have the official up the booth that tells you they're 100% wrong. What in the world is going on?
Well, it seems to be kind of an issue with every sport. You know, gee, I almost said something when I first got on the call here, guys. What do I hear from Tommy complaining about the officiating in the NHL? Which, I got to be honest, guys, I think you can make a drinking game out of people in the Lightning organization complaining about the officiating. And by the end of the first period, you'd be drunk. You'd be passed out. I have never heard an organization. Tommy, with all due respect to you and everybody else, you know I love everybody there, Chief and everybody. But I have never heard an organization complain more about officiating than Tampa Bay Lightning. And what people don't realize is it's the same for everybody. You know what?
Right.
I'm so tired of people complaining about officiating in every sport. Enough already, okay?
That's right.
You know, I mean, I think the officiating is better now than it's ever been. We have replay in place. Make sure the calls are right. Everybody's doing the best they possibly can. Nobody's trying to screw up, you know. But, you know, you're going to have good calls. You're going to have bad calls. You're going to have good calls. You're going to have bad calls.
Yeah, but let me interrupt for a second. When you have a punter out there and nobody's around them and is – Not his punting leg, but his anchor leg is hit, and it's an automatic roughing the kicker, not just running into him. How can six or seven officials not see that?
Well, there was one of those, and they called a penalty.
No, they called a 5-yard penalty. San Francisco would have kept the ball with a 15-yard penalty. That was a big turning point in the game.
Well, here's the problem with the NFL, guys. The NFL, and then the NHL, too, really, in a lot of ways, it's all judgment calls. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no real
black and
white.
Yeah, but that's not a judgment, Roy. That's not a judgment. That's a clear fact. I mean, it's right there in the wide open.
Well, I clearly there's a difference, though, between roughing and hitting. You can hit the kicker, but
if you hit his leg, not the punting leg. If you hit his leg, the anchor leg, it's an automatic 15-yard penalty. Mm-hmm. Not five, not running into the kicker. Automatic 15 if you hit his anchor leg.
Well, again, I think it's an issue that's got to be taken up with the committee that looks at the rules, the competition committee. And, you know, they're always changing rules in this league. They're trying to make it better, you know. But, again, you know what? Hey. It is what it is. I'm telling you, I saw an awful lot of questionable calls this year covering, you know, the Bucks. And, you know, it is what it is. Some of them I thought were ridiculous, and, you know, some I thought were warranted. But it is what it is.
Well, they said they were going to review that 1-yard fumble and that would be changed next year, that they were going to reevaluate. I mean, fortunately, you know, the Seahawks, fumbled on the very next play. It didn't make any difference. But I mean, that was a clear, obvious recovery of a fumble, and they can't review that now, but they can. They said they're going to review it for next year.
Right. I mean, I don't think the officials don't know the rules. The problem is I think they know the rules extremely well. And if you get into a situation and they can't review, I mean, that play cannot be reviewed is ridiculous. I mean, that may have changed the game right there. That may have changed the momentum of the game. And you know, and that stuff shouldn't be allowed to happen. But you know, that's the way it is.
Right.
And you were talking earlier about the hitting. I mean, it was clear as you looked at the replay. Now we had 10 or 15 chances to look at the replay. When the tackle was made, it was nowhere near his helmet. I mean, he hit it with his pads.
Yeah. I know. Hey, You're right. We get a lot of looks at it, but if you're trying to look at it live, it's a completely different thing.
That's where I agree. See, that's where I say to you, judgment, that I'm willing to give them any judgment call. I'm willing to say, look, it's too fast a game, too big, you're going to make mistakes. But when something's wide open, then I don't give them a pass. I say, you got to make the right call.
I hear you. Hey, Don, here's another one.
Tony
Sperano did three NCAA football games. I'm sorry, basketball games.
Basketball,
prior to coming there on Sunday. Now, tell me he wasn't tired. And tell me that the helmet that every one of them missed that
Frank,
happened.
Frank, I'll tell you this. I don't think they should have said that, to be honest with you. I'm agreeing with you that you're probably right. He shouldn't have refereed the game Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, and then did the game Sunday. I agree with you 100%. But I don't think they should have brought that up during the course of the ball game because
then all you're doing
is giving everybody that's watching the game, 55 million people, a chance to say, well, that guy's tired. He's making mistakes. I don't believe that.
Oh, no.
Hey, guys,
no,
I appreciate you having me on, but I got to run. So hopefully we can do it again next week.
Okay,
all right,
Roy.
Good to talk with you always.
All right, guys, take care.
Take care, boy.
What do you fellas think about that? The fact that they were, you know, bringing that out—that it was in all the papers.
Was
it wasn't just, but that was after the fact. It was in the papers after the fact, not during the game or before the game.
I got to agree with you on that one. There, the guy was too tired, and they're missing calls right in front of their eyes. For God's sake, how can you? Missed calls in the championship game out there. All the leagues, they picked their best officials for the championship games out there. And I remember that punt, the guy punted a ball, ran right into him, no flag, and that fumbled
right
the 1 yard line. I mean, I agree with 100%, Donnie. These officials, they got to get better for next year. I should have brought this point up with Roy. Next year, the NFL, Roger, you heard about this, and Frank and Don. Next year, a touchdown will be 7 points. Now, if you want to go for 2-point conversion, if you miss it, you get -2. It'd be 6 points just for the touchdown. I think that's a great that is a great call. The extra point, I mean, you know, what's the extra point? They line up and they kick the football. And
right.
Goodell's trying to say, let's get away from the extra point and let's go for this touchdown is 7, which should have been years ago. If you want a 2-point conversion, you make it, it's 8. You miss it at 6. That's a great
thing.
Tommy,
I don't disagree with you, but I got to say this. They haven't put that in yet. The rules committee, they're thinking about
right, okay.
doing that. But that's not a fact
right.
yet.
No,
right.
but that's a great thing, Don.
It's a great
Tommy,
idea.
I think you're going to have more of a problem with the getting it past the rules committee because right now that's not really holding the game up. What's holding the game up is when you get 53 yards out and you figure, what the hell, let's just kick the ball. And then the next thing you know, we're losing the game by 1 point, but it's not because of the point after. It's because we're kicking so many field goals. We're back to pre-1950s.
Right. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what else, Frank. What's holding it up, and that's the challenges. Okay, they need to go to the college way where it's done upstairs,
right.
And then they let the referee know and like moving right along.
Right.
I couldn't
exactly.
agree with you more. I've been saying that for 3 or 4 years that the colleges get it so much more effectively than the pros do.
Absolutely.
It just takes so long for a pro football game anymore, like 3.5. It should be college game is so quick, bang, 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 pro game, 3 to 4 hours, 5 hours for a pro game up there. And
Tommy, they say the same thing about baseball. The length of the game, they can talk all they want to that the games, you know, 15 years ago were 2 hours and 10 minutes, and now they're 2 hours and 45 minutes. Are you going to leave because the game's 2 hours and 45 minutes? I mean, they start at 7
right
o'clock
now.
They don't start at 8 o'clock at night like they used to. They start at 7. So,
exactly.
The length of the game.
Your point about the official, the former official Mike Pereira, for Fox, and then Jerry Austin's been there for, I guess ESPN, et cetera. You know, what was interesting is they had Pereira and another guy from at one of the other networks, and they both disagreed. One said it was one way, and the other one said, no, it's not. So there's two former officials that have a different view of it.
Well, anytime I've ever seen it, Roger, I think it's a clear, to me anyway, I think if you run into the kicker is one thing. I think that's a clear, obvious penalty of 5 yards. But when you take the guy's legs out, I mean, that's all he's got.
Mm-hmm.
And you take
that's
the
right.
guy's legs out, that can't be anything but a roughing the kicker.
Exactly. Because the kicker has no defense. He's kicking
right.
the ball this height up there. He's one is a plant foot. When you take his legs out, you could injure the kicker for the rest of his life up there. Concussion for a kicker. Because remember the old days, guys, for the extra point, used to climb in each other's back to try to block it. You can't do that now because that's a dangerous play up there. Now when you block,
well, how
a
about
kicker,
the one where they pushed them and they gave a penalty? That happened this year.
Right.
That's right. Yep. It's just so much the officials got to stop. I mean, Mike, but the NFL is still the greatest game ever, but I hope one thing doesn't happen. It doesn't snow.
Well, Tommy, let's everybody's danced around a lot of things here tonight, but not anybody has come up with a $155 million contract for a guy who's never played ball in the United States. How the hell can I? And then the guy gets $100,000 a year for living expenses in Tampa and New York.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Tanaka, yeah. right?
That's Matsushi Tanaka.
Tanaka.
He got
yeah.
signed with the Yanks today for $155 million.
Mm.
And
oh,
the
boy.
Headline in the paper, Don, right? The Post?
Yep.
The Yankees are back.
Well, not only that, but there goes the $189 million right out the window. You know, Cashman worked all last year from June on to keep it ready to go at $189 million because the Steinbrenners weren't going to go any higher than that. And now they were at 170, even with A-Rod being out. Yeah, they got $22 million of his 25 back. He still gets three. So, now they're well over, unless they – dump the club. They're well over the $189 million.
Right. I thought it was interesting talking about A-Rod that the MLB players want to get him out of the union.
They can't.
They can't.
No, they can't. They said that today, that there's no caveat within their contract that they can exclude a player. So, the players said they want to get him out, but they can't.
Mm. Steinbrenner Field, I can see Legends Field right now, or I can just see the Himes Avenue, the Yankees report. You have A-Rod, and the Japanese media will go after their players. I can just see it right now. The lunchroom
well,
would be
that, if you
sessions.
Thought they followed Matsui around, what do you think they're going to do with this guy?
Oh, my God.
Right.
If he pitches on it, you better hope when the Yankees come to town, the guy's not going to be pitched because – I mean, no seats in the press box. You got to go inside to try to get the Hijojo already, and you have to do it. You have to do avoiding all the Japanese media. They're great guys, but you got to get in there and get out there at the same time.
Tommy, I'll come down and I'll interpret for you. I guess you'll see that,
yeah. Sure, I don't know, but I mean, gee, I can see right now at the old Steinbrenner Field, then Legends Field, right, when Matsui was there, they had to serve the media meal in shifts, right? And there's a sign on the table, he used to cover the Yankees, and it says, please hurry up with your meal. Now, I said to the girl, I am not going to gobble down my food, which I paid $8 for these people sit in my spot. I'm not going to do that.
Oh, you rabble-rouser, Tommy. You're starting all
Hey,
sorts
Leo!
Of
hey, there he is. Leo,
hey.
Let
gentlemen,
me tell you something.
We,
when the Yankees, you went to the Yankee games, not just down here when you went to spring training, but if you went to Yankee Stadium, I'm telling you, couldn't between home plate and first base or home plate and third, you couldn't walk anywhere around there. There were so many of the Japanese writers, TV people, radio people. Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. I just hate to see it because Legends Field, I mean, Steinbrenner Field is a small place up there. Leo, we're talking about when Matsui came in there to cover the Yankees years ago, right? There was
mm-hmm.
a sign on the table, right? Please hurry up with your lunch. I mean, I am not going to wolf down a lunch I just paid $8 for. Then you got to go upstairs in the press box, which is small already.
Tommy, you're always complaining. Yeah, they were trying to take care of you. They want to make sure that you get your first decent meal of the day. And what do? You bad mouth the poor people.
You know what, though, guys? Hey, Tommy and I would still be sitting there eating the buffet. You ain't rushing us, are you, Tommy?
No, but a sign said on the table, please hurry up with your lunch. Just
Tommy's still got three steaks left from the Outback Bowl.
That's right.
Hey, make
that's
that
right.
Four, big boy. Let's get it right. Four.
All right, Leo, how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing fine. Can I get on my rant?
You certainly can. You should have been on a little earlier. We've been going around and around on a number of things. Go to it.
Well, there's probably two things. Let me hit the first one, okay?
Okay.
I can't believe I'm looking at all this talk about the safety of the athletes at the Sochi Olympics. Has somebody thought about what's happening a week from Sunday in the biggest city in the world? Yeah. Uh-huh. I'll tell you what, security will probably be tighter than a presidential visit at Giant Stadium. And I'll tell you what, I hope it has a blizzard, and here's why. I want this to be the last time you even think about having it in a northern city without a... I mean, this is the
Leo,
most...
Leo, anytime they build something for $1.6 billion, you're gonna get a Super Bowl there. You can bet your life on it.
Well, you know what? If they build a $1.6 million stadium in Green Bay, it ain't going there after this.
Billion? Not million. Billion.
That's what I said. I don't care where you build it. If they have the weather they're talking about, they got 14 inches of snow yesterday. I mean, if they end up with this, not next Sunday, but next Saturday, there are two options. One, postpone the game till Monday. Think about that now.
Well, they have that alternative. They've already put that in.
Yeah, think about that, and you'll be playing it in front of 2,000 people.
No, you won't.
Trust me. They'll have to give it away to high school kids to show up.
Leo, let me tell you, I don't know whether Roger saw it or not, because he doesn't get the post every day like I do. You know what they're selling those tickets for right now?
The face value is over $1,000.
Well, the $800, $850.
Yeah.
They're selling now. They had one suite for $1 million. One suite.
$1 million. Yeah,
$1 million. They have five or six suites for $500,000 or above. A single seat they're willing to pay $100,000 for.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
well, just to follow up with what Leo was saying, I was talking to George O'Gorman of the Trentonian today, a good friend of Don and myself, and, of course, he covers the Giants. You know, we've had him on as a guest. And I knew that the two hotels where the teams are staying, are both of them are in Jersey City. But what I didn't know is they're four blocks apart. And evidently they're on the water, on the river, because they have police boats that are out there in mass with all kinds of technology for security purposes, and they're already there, even though the teams are not there. So it's very interesting. It's a challenge, and from what I heard tonight, I was listening to Chris Russo on Sirius XM, the new mayor of New York, who I feel's got to be one of the worst guys they could ever have as a mayor, but. he's already in doo-doo because they have done a poor job on his first snowstorm in New York.
Oh, yeah. And guys, think about this now. Governor Christie will not be afraid, if there is a problem weather-wise, to shut down the interstate and shut down the turnpike. And I'll tell you what, this is a cluster you-know-what of epic proportion. This will definitely trump Roselle's move to play the weekend of the Kennedy assassination. This will be Roger Goodell's albatross, and he'll have to wear it the rest of his time.
Yep.
Well, we're going to have to wait and see. And going back to Roger's point, I think de Blasio has made a poor decision in that. He took Al Sharpton's campaign, a woman, and he's paying her $170,000 to be his wife's aide. 170,000, Al Sharpton. I mean, give me a break.
if he was not African American, Al Sharpton would have been fired by MSNBC, like all these other people he hosts. I mean, the guy is all he is a fire chaser. You know, when it comes to racial things, and you look at the Tawana Brawley and all these other things, and of course de Blasio's wife is black, and so, you know, that's why he's keeping it within the house.
And you know what, guys? I don't know if you heard about up here, but we had a shooting in a theater where a former Tampa police officer shot and killed a gentleman in the theater.
And
in the back of my mind, I was going, thank God he was white. Because if he was black, it would have been like the end of the world. It would have been the Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, you know, love-a-thon down here. That, you know, now it would have been a hate crime. And I just, you know, it's getting old, fellas. It's really
well, I'll tell you one
old.
Thing, just
Thank
to back
you.
Up what Roger said a second ago. And you know, when Ray Kelly was the commissioner, he's not the commissioner anymore since, you know, they changed government. But he instituted, you were talking about patrolling the waterways in front of the two hotels. He has right now the number one fleet of security on the water of any city in America. They have things that you can't even believe that he's developed for that for the city of New York before he, you know, was left out as the police commissioner. He was absolutely tremendous.
Absolutely the best.
Guys, let me ask you this. Does this fall under New York, New Jersey, or is this a Port Authority issue with protecting
both.
Them?
All three.
The river.
All three.
All three. All three.
Yeah, this will be I'll tell you what, this will be tight security, which needs to be.
And also the federal government. It's going to be all of them. Yeah, four,
right.
Actually, it's four, not three. It's actually four.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't need any problems with that. That's for sure.
Well, you know, Don. Also, you got to remember the tri-state area. You also have Connecticut because you've got a coming right down the across Bronx comes right 95 comes right out of Connecticut, and of course you can be in Greenwich in no time at all.
Yeah, right over the Whitestone Bridge, right, guys.
That's it.
Boom.
That's right. But how many teams will be staying? Fans will be staying in Atlantic City. Knowing that they can make the hour trip up to New York if it's not snowing up, or probably those casinos are had those pre-arranged booked already, and they show for their high rollers up to the Super Bowl, put them right back to their hotel.
I disagree with Leo in that sense. I hope they don't have a snowstorm. I hope it goes off smoothly.
Either.
And
I
you know, the same thing with the Olympic Games. I don't know anything about Putin and what he's doing. All I know is that I hope that his security is going to be sufficient so that all this hullabaloo about people dropping bombs and terrorists and all that kind of stuff at the Olympic Games, I hope it all goes by the boards and is untrue myself. That's all I can say.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. My wife's sister is an interior designer, and they have a big show in New York next week, ironically, Super Bowl. And she's not going to go because the prices of the hotel rooms are just out of sight, and I'm going up on Tuesday, but I'm staying over at the courtyard off of 95, Don, you know, at the Scotch Road.
Right.
And, I'm just going to go over to Hamilton. What's that, a 15-minute ride, hop on a train, a little over an hour, you're at Penn Station.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, you can go right to the Meadowlands. You go right out of, Hamilton.
Well, you can,
absolutely.
But, you know, Leo, there's hardly anything at the Meadowlands other than Media Day. Okay, because, you go to the hotels and you go to the media center, which is at the Sheraton at Times Square. So.
Right.
Yeah,
it's all in the city.
All Manhattan.
Yep,
all over Manhattan
proper, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, guys, can I switch gears for 1 second?
Go ahead.
Do you think there's 31 general managers that just looked at the Los Angeles Dodgers and said, are you guys nuts giving Clayton Kershaw $30 million a year to pitch? I can't believe Bud Selig didn't come out and void the contract. That has just completely, I mean, think about it now. He has set the bar, the Dodgers have. for Clayton Kershaw, $30 million a year. That's $1 million a start. The Rays can kiss David Price goodbye. There isn't a small market team.
Yep.
No, there isn't a small market team that can afford him, and there isn't a medium market team that can afford him. Basically, they've said, we're going to create a league of the haves and the have-nots. And
wow.
the haves are going to be the two Los Angeles teams, the two New York teams, Boston, and one other. And that's it. I mean, it's completely out of control right now. And I cannot believe Bud Selig didn't come in and say, hey, we're voiding that contract. You can't do this.
I don't think he can do that. I don't think he can do that either.
Well, remember Bowie Kuhn?
That was different. That was
right.
When they were trading players. That was an entirely different situation. That was not under a contract agreement that the Players Association and the owners agreed to. That there's no way he could step in and do anything about that.
Even if it's in what they call the best interest of baseball, which is what the commissioner can do?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think so, Bob.
Well, I think Kyle Kendrick just got, what, $7.5 or $8 million. And, I mean, you know, I think that's ridiculous, but that's the going market.
Well, yeah, that's fine. At least that's still. But you're talking $1 million a start, guys.
That's right.
That's unbelievable.
The Dodgers are going to spend themselves right out of the game. I mean,
exactly.
You know, we think the Yankees are crazy. The Dodgers are twice as crazy.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the problem is they got such a lucrative TV contract, that's pocket change for them.
How did Kershaw do in the playoffs last year?
not good at all.
Yeah, 0-2.
But remember, guys, you got to think like an owner. And again, if the San Francisco 49ers would have went to the Super Bowl, you know how much the ownership of the 49ers would have gotten out of the playoffs? Zero. Nothing. Because if you don't get a home playoff game, there is no sharing of revenue.
That's right. Great point.
That's right. Yeah, you're right.
Philadelphia Eagles made more money than the San Francisco 49ers because they had a home playoff game. I mean, I finally got Paul Perron to come over to the dark side with me. I told him, Paul, you got to think like an owner. The reason why they got rid of Andy Reid was not because of his record. He went 3 years without a home playoff game. You've got to get home playoff games. Because remember when the Eagles beat Dallas and Jerry Jones turned around and you could see how livid he was? That play cost him $60 million.
Yep.
Because that's what he would have made, $60 million on a playoff game in Dallas. And he hasn't had one in 14 years. Think about that. That's right.
It couldn't happen to a better person than Jerry Jones.
Well, on a lighter note, I don't know whether you guys saw it today. There's a rumor that Jamie Moyer interviewed to replace Chris Wheeler and Gary Matthews on the TV.
Really?
Well, they've had a lot of names out there, but they're not being too successful. Mitch Williams is the first guy that they were going to lure away from Fox and MLB, and that didn't work out too well. And then they were going to get Moriarty, right? He was going to be the next one.
Brad Lidge. He doesn't want him to leave Colorado.
Yeah, yeah.
They said Jamie was at the Notre Dame game because they honored Digger, you know, his father-in-law. And then they said he was in Philadelphia, and then it was on Twitter that he was there. But, you know, and I think because, you know, he gives a pretty good opinion of things. And I think Jamie Moyer would probably be a good acquisition if they're going to. I mean, as a replacement, we don't want to see Chris and Gary go. But since they're gone, we have no choice.
I would agree because he's a St. Joe product, first of all, and I know Frank's close to that. And then you know he's got so much experience at the major league level and so much analytical. Content that he could bring to the game. I agree with Roger. I think he'd be a great hire.
Plus, if you need somebody to pitch, you can get him out of the booth. He could probably still throw 4 or 5 innings.
Fantasy camp, Leo. It would probably be a fantasy camp up there or not. But, no, I think that would be a great move for that. And I still
hey,
want to see
Todd
Callis.
I don't know if anybody saw it, but Ruben Amaro has gone back and asked. He's got Doc Holliday and Brad Lidge both coming in to Clearwater as instructors this year,
Exactly.
And the one person he'll be missing from the, his usual instructing staff is Mike Schmidt. He's having health problems, and he's not going to be able to come down.
Oh, no.
Did you say he had also signed Abreu? Did you mention that?
Yes.
No, we didn't talk about that. Yeah, he was signed.
Yeah, he was signed to a minor league contract and invited to spring training. So Ruben Amaro is sort of rewarding him, I think, as a former Philly player, giving him an opportunity to come in and step in and do something.
I had heard about Mike Schmidt.
Our Daily News has a cartoon about Ruben Amaro going through nursing homes looking for old players.
Let me guess. He found Pancho Herrera.
Yeah. How about Elmer Vallo?
Elmer Vallo. Now we're really digging. Yeah. Yeah.
How about Eddie
Winkins?
Wait a minute. Now Elmer Vallo was an A. He wasn't a Philly.
Yes.
Yeah, he played with the Phillies too.
Yeah, he did. Not long.
Maybe 5 days. I don't remember Elmer Vallo with the Phillies.
Yeah, about 55, 56 in that era.
He came in with Swish Nicholson, huh?
bring back
Johnny.
Johnny,
you didn't tell us about the big trade today. The Rays made seven players for Alex Torres.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear about that, Frank. Seven players for Alex Torres.
Yeah, they get a utility infielder, Finley from
Forsyth.
Oh, that one. Okay, they got San Diego.
Six players that are minor league players, the good prospects.
Yeah, and the one guy was hitting a robust 214. They're looking at him as a real.
he had a foot operation at the end of the season before.
Yeah.
And that's why his production was way down this year.
Yeah, he never got healthy all year. You know,
right.
That was amazing.
Alex Torres.
Let me just correct myself. Morandini was the one I was thinking, not Moriarty. Morandini.
Oh, okay.
Mike
Morandini.
Oh,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the one of the interviews supposedly.
That's
wow.
Right. Yeah. By the way, Elmer Vallo is donned Phillies 1961.
You're the only one old enough to remember that.
Yeah, he was with the A's 40-43 and 46-56. Of course, after they moved to Kansas City, he was with the Dodgers 57-58. The Indians, Tommy, 59. The Yankees in 60. The Senators, the Twins in 60-61.
Wow,
he was an outstanding player. I mean, it was Sam Chapman in center field, Elmer Vallo, and what the heck was the left fielder's name? Hit all the home runs.
Gus Durniel.
Gus Durniel. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God! How good he is! How good he is was with the Cleveland Indians. That's the one I got to find. I have to look that up tonight. Elmer Vallo, 59.
Yeah. We just got a
communique from Pop Warner. They've released two coaches to talk to your home team.
speaking of that,
I'm just amazed they haven't called Leo for some suggestions.
They should call.
Let's cover two things here. You know, why would you want to go to Cleveland when they fire a guy 1 year in?
That's what we just said.
And the second thing is, how about the Bucks? What was this guy like, their 15th or 16th choice? I mean, nobody wants to come in if the head coach has total control over personnel. I mean, hello? What are you? it's hysterical when you think about that. You know, I'm the general manager, and we're cutting him. No, you're not. Oh, well, really? that amazed me how the Bucks could still do something bass-ackwards like that.
Well, Roy disagrees with you. You got on after Roy was with us, and he thinks it's a great hire. And I got to say, from the early reviews, let me just put it that way, that you're right there in Tampa, but the early reviews are very positive, that these two guys can work together with no problem, and you may be right. They all may be wrong, but everything has been very positive coming out of the Bucks camp, but really coming out of the league.
Well, you know what, guys? The early reviews on Josh Freeman were the same. I'll leave it at that. And I was the one guy in this town that said it was the biggest mistake they made. And Josh Freeman is probably going to be out of the NFL. He will probably not find another job. There are things that are going to come out within the next 6 months that will just blow you away, literally and figuratively, from what this guy did to ruin his career.
So there was a lot more to it than what we're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. And you know what? Schiano took a brunt of this because, you know, he wanted to get rid of him early and he couldn't. And, you know, Glennon wasn't ready. Let's be honest. He wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. But by week four, it got to a point where he had to get rid of Freeman. Freeman was a cancer on the team. Just, oh, Lord. Yeah, his middle name was Mercer. It was terrible. Mm.
Mm.
But you know what, guys?
Leo, a lot of people may not know what a staph infection is.
Boy, I'll tell you what, that's a great point there, you know. you don't want it, that's for sure. Right, Tommy?
Mercer's not anything to kid about.
No, is this a serious injury? The one kicker over there for the Bucks, he had Mercer, then Carl next had it, and the Josh Freeman situation. I mean, the Bucks are just glad that 2013 is over. This starts fresh with Lovie Smith and new AGM today. And I go back and look at Glennon's starts up here. Leo, he reminds me of younger Brad Johnson. He gets the job done.
Well, you know what, Tommy, I look at this, and the first thing they got to decide on is if Glennon's their guy. And normally speaking, when a head coach and a general manager comes in, they're not their guy. But who's the guy out there to get them? I think you need to see if Glennon can do what you wanted to do offensively. But right now, I don't think you draft a Teddy Bridgewater, you draft a Johnny Manziel, you draft anybody up there with your first pick, you need a defensive end. I mean, if Clowney's around at 7, you got to take him. I mean, dear God, if Sammy Watkins is around, you got to take him. I mean, everybody has this inflated view of the Bucs talent.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, when you look at you fired Greg Schiano because of the record, but when you look at the end of the season, he had a rookie quarterback. He had a third-team running back. He had a rookie tight end. He had a backup wideout. He had an all-pro guard on one leg. He had another all-pro guard that never saw the field. I mean, Jesus Christ couldn't have won with those guys. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he was playing with backups.
Leonard Johnson for a special has got burnt for toast up there. But look at Michael Bennett, Leo, for Seattle. Recovered a fumble. He's going to the Super Bowl.
Right. And I assume you guys touched on Richard Sherman already.
No, we're waiting for you.
Yeah, we did. Well, we mentioned it, but we didn't really go into about it in comparison to Aaron Andrews doing the interview.
Well, you know what, guys? You're going to probably think I'm going to go after him, but I'm not. And here's why. I know Richard Sherman. I had a chance to meet him and talk with him. The guy is very articulate. He's very grounded. But he may be the most emotional guy in the game. And again, until you play this game, and I can't say I played on a professional, but I played on the college level. And believe me, you've got to have a thug mentality to play this game, because the things you do on the football field they'd arrest you and put you away for 3 to 5 if you did that out in public. So you've got to have a different mentality. The guy had just made the greatest play of his life, and he was wired. Let's be honest, he was wired up. And did he say something? Could he have done it differently? Yeah, but that's not Richard. Richard is an emotional, high-strung guy. You're talking about a Stanford grad with a degree, so we're not talking about gangbanger coming out of the hood. We're talking about a guy who's got a degree.
But, Leo, you can't accept that. I mean, you just cannot. I mean, he embarrassed that poor lady. I mean, and he, not only that, he embarrassed himself. He embarrassed the league. I watched the NFL after the game, and Primetime said the same thing you're saying. You know, he is the best you know, cornerback in the league. He should be able to, you know, pat himself on the back. He should be able to do this. I don't buy that. I don't buy that. You've got a responsibility to everybody on that team and the league and the people watching on television. You can't do something like that.
Yeah,
I don't care if he's a Stanford graduate or not.
Yeah, but you know what, guys? Let's get the cameras out of there. Let's get the microphone out of there and let these guys cool down. Donnie, you know as well as I do, you can't go in that locker room for 10 minutes after the game. It's a cool
as it
down
should
period
be. As it
and
should
you know
be.
What? And it should be. So they should not allow the cameras on the field. And I'll tell you what, Tommy, you know as well as I do, they pulled all the reporters off the field. They pulled all the cameras off the field. Remember, we used to be able to get on in 6 minutes, Tommy.
Yep,
remember?
6 minute mark.
Now you can't. The NFL refuses to let anybody on the field because they only let Fox, NFL Network, and NBC and ESPN get on there.
Leo, 19 spots, $4 million for 30 seconds. What do you think they're going to do?
Yeah, they're going to keep them. Yeah, exactly. But then don't complain if a guy pops off. I mean, it's in the heat of the moment.
Oh, I don't think they're complaining. I think it's the general populace that is complaining. I don't think the league's complaining.
Oh, no. It's entertainment and it's publicity, and they want it. They want
that publicity.
Publicity. It's all over.
Yeah.
By the way, that interview Tom Brookshire did was with Dwayne Thomas.
That's it, Thomas, not Jones.
Oh, that's right.
Thomas
Norfolk
is right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Super Bowl VI.
Tommy, weren't they talking about putting cameras in hockey locker rooms before the game, like kind of like just to follow guys around beforehand? And didn't the Players Union nix that? Said, hey,
they
look,
nixed that, but
Suns,
Leo, but Sun Sports did that a couple of years ago. They had a shot in there. The guys were sitting around, you know, just doing nothing, just resting in that. But then that shot got nixed by the Suns, by the Lightning up there. But at the NHL Players Association, they nixed that because they don't want anybody in the quote room up there. It's just it's inexcusable. But getting back to that guy from Stanford, I mean, that's the game just over. You had the play of the year, the play of the game, emotional thing. Now this will go over to the NFL loves the Frisco Seahawk rivalry. This guy's coming to New York. You'd be excited to play against. This is what the NFL wants: is publicity for these teams and the team going into New York for the Super Bowl. Publicity. That's all they want to fire everything up.
Oh, absolutely. I tell you what, the NFL probably sat there and one side of their mouth is saying, "Oh, you know, he should have never said that." And
right.
The other side,
money, dollars and cents, Leo.
They're going cha-ching, cha-ching,
cha-ching. Yep, dollars and cents coming up there. That's what they want. I mean, sure he was not, you know, sure he was not. Then he went up to try to shake his hand to the other guy, you know, said, I'm sorry. Then the other guy got in his face up there and that. But it's a heat of the moment, guys. You know,
Tommy, every sport today is in.
Oh, exactly, Don.
It's all money. It's all money.
Sure.
And they could tell me it was okay that he did it, and it was in the heat of the moment and all that. I happen to be a person that disagrees with that, but I agree with you. He got a lot more publicity. When he gets to New York, a lot of people across the country that never even heard of the guy, don't know him, are going to say, well, what's Sherman got to say? What's Sherman got to say?
Yeah.
Guys, remember Joe Namath? Exactly what happened. Joe Namath and Johnny Sample about the Colts and the Jets. Super Bowl number 3. Remember Joe Namath and Johnny Sample?
Guaranteed
exactly
to win.
Exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing.
You know, the funny thing about that is when you look at people on the Jets, like Don Maynard and that, when they came out afterwards and talked about it, he said, you know, we looked at film and we said, dear God, we're going to beat these guys bad. But Namath's the only one that came out and said, fellas, we're going to win this game, period. End of story. And, you know, that's it. That was kind of comical when you look at it because, I mean, Baltimore was never in the game. They were never in the game.
And Leo's the same thing with the Buccaneers. What did John Lynch sense when they played the Oakland Raiders? We practice against these plays.
And you know what? The best thing about this is when you look at the Bucs run to the Super Bowl, okay, they played San Francisco. They played Philadelphia. They played Oakland. What's the common tie? John Gruden coached in all three places, and they all ran the West Coast offense. I mean, you talk to John Lynch, he'll tell you, we knew exactly what they were going to do. Yep. And to, it was funny because, fellas, I had the first question of Bill Callahan out at the Super Bowl when he came out. My question was to him, very simple and very succinct, how are you going to be able at practice to replicate the Bucs' speed on defense? And he said, we'll have no trouble doing that. And I turned to Scotty Hayes next to me and said, they are going to get beat so bad it's not even funny. They have no clue.
Oh, I remember that now. Yes. Well, you told me.
They have no clue. And I'll tell you what, guys, quick Super Bowl start. The key to the game is going to be whether the Broncos receivers can get yards after the catch. I don't know if anybody looked at the San Francisco game, but I'll tell you what, when the San Francisco receivers caught the ball, they got tackled and right away. And Cam Chancellor, my God, the guy's an assassin. Oh, God. When he hits you, you're hit. And, I mean, there was very little, if any, yards after catch for the 49ers. They caught it, and they got hit, and they got hit hard.
Leo, I got one question for you. I got the Puppy Bowl Cocker Spaniel 2-1 to be the MVP this year.
No, I'm going with the Schnauzer.
Roger, when are you heading to New York? On Tuesday?
On Tuesday, yeah. But I wanted just to follow up with Leo about the 49ers. I am not a Kaepernick fan. I mean, he's a good player, and the way he came out on the post game with the hat on sideways. He looked like a hood from the hood, and I thought it was very interesting. As soon as they went back to Deion Sanders, he made the statement, and Marshall Falk was laughing about it too with him. He says, "What's he wearing? Anybody notice?" He says, "Man," I says, "I love that kid, but he's got a lot of growing up to do."
Wow!
That's right.
Well, he's
You know, I couldn't believe that they were defending the whole thing as much as they were. I mean, I would have let it slide if they wanted to talk about it positively. I just would have let it slide. I wouldn't have said anything. I'd rather than what they did.
Yeah, you know, I
agree.
It's gotten to a point now, guys, where if I'm an owner, and if I'm the owner, I'm going to just call him aside and say, son, you know, that's not the image I want portrayed by my organization. Next time, have the hat on straight or don't have it on.
Yeah, but they can't. Leo, they're in a situation now where the guy's got tattoos all over him. You know, the hat on sideways. I mean, as Roger said, I mean, you're almost looking like it's somebody out of East St. Louis or something.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And you know what, guys? The NCAA and the high schools can stop that. All they got to do is say 4 years from now, any tattoo showing, you can't play.
Right.
That's all
I agree with you 100%, but you have to get more than 4 years because these kids are getting these tattoos now junior high school.
Eighth grade.
You know, tell them now. Yeah, hey, you got 4 years. If you get a tattoo, it cannot show.
Wow.
I thought what was interesting about Sherman was that they said when he was at Stanford, Harbaugh ran a close-knit shop, you know, as far as what you could say to the media. And Pete Carroll's much more liberal. And then I look at Kaepernick and to see the way he came out there, I can't believe Harbaugh's running a closed shop. I mean, he would never have a guy come out like that. You look at the other teams, they came out in suits after the game, or at least business casual to look presentable.
Yeah,
great point, guys, when you think about that. Frank just told me tick-tick-tock, like, I guess another...
What does that mean?
That means Mickey's leg is getting up toward the 12, guys, and it's trying to leave.
Well, John, we had another good week, 2 hours of fun, and we'll get it all together again next Wednesday. Thank you very much, Tommy, and good night to everybody. God bless.
We'll talk to you from,
gentlemen.
We'll talk to you from the Big Apple.
Yo, Battle safe, bro.
Hey, Roger, thanks for that email on Bill Campbell's wife. That was
a sad note about Joe passing away. We'll talk about that, too. The funeral's coming up. But thanks a lot. It was great to have Morton on tonight. I hope everybody enjoyed it. He's a great guy.
All right, guys. Take care, gentlemen.
Take care. Thank you, guys.
Bye now.
Well, Frank, what a show. I'd like to thank Morton Anderson, former New Orleans Saints, and hopefully we get to the Hall of Fame and get the prayer chain going. Of course, we missed out Bobby the Chief Taylor. We'll have to talk to them tomorrow about that. I'd like to thank Alec Erickson of the Tampa Tribune, Roy Cummings of the Tampa Tribune, our Philadelphia legend Don Henderson, Atlanta legend Roger Henner, our football guru, Mr. Leo Haggerty, and most of all, Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. Purchase the water here, log on to bradfordwhite.com. The Abbey course, where I was out there yesterday, foursome of golf, $80, $20 a person, fast greens. Give Tom a call, 352-588-2016, Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club, 27 holes of golf. Frank, a great place to hold your banquet event. On next Tuesday, it's 9 years between Barbie and I, so I should dedicate the show next week to my lovely wife, Barbie, of 9 years. Give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454. Reminder note, Lightning's home tomorrow night versus the Ottawa Senators, 7:30 face-off, 813-301-6600. Saturday night versus Colorado, tickets, 813-301-6600. Frank, always God bless, a great job, and the next week's show will be dedicated to my wife for 9 years, Miss Connie Gilbert. Frank, take it away.
Okay, Tommy, we want to wish all we want to thank all our fans worldwide listening. We appreciate all your support over the years. We also want to remind you that these programs are brought to you each and every night. Grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, just say thank you. It means the world of good to everybody. These programs are also dedicated to fallen officers Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Kolkep, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Patrolman Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Philadelphia, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, and Sergeant Mike Wilson, the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hollow of his hands. Good night.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezah yilama, son ashen evorat fet hakuig again ma yilama.
Shema Israel, Shema Israel, Shema Israel.
raindrops play and proudly toast his noble fame, who stare at hand with mind aflame, to Wesham strength and length of days. Shame on him, my era man, shame on him, my era man, soon the shame they bore a pain, talk weak again, my era man.
County Dispatch of 1999. County Dispatch of 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to the last emergency. May God bless his soul. Love you.